TNT Radio wants to know what you really think, because your opinion matters. At TNTRadio.live, upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's Soapbox. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. Brian McClain is Hesher, and both are on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome everybody. Welcome to the show. Oh boy, okay, it's November 30th. It is Brian McClain talking to you from Central Texas out here. I'm live with today's News Talk, TNTRadio.live. That's where you find us on the web. And yeah, I hope everybody's having a great week out there. We're hitting hump day here. So, you know, the media kind of peaks on Wednesdays oftenly. The headlines just get absolutely bananas. And here we go. Here we go. Alabama becomes the second state to take election security seriously and terminate ERIC contract. What else do we got? Christian conservative rapper burns Balenciaga shoes. All right. Let's see. Apple helps Chinese communists suppress protests, removes crucial tool of dissent on iPhones, and does not tell mainland users. What else do we got here? Day late and a dollar short, Republican National Committee launching board to review lousy midterm results. My goodness, everybody, it's just crazy out there. What else do we got? Texas parents rankling with school boards about graphic library books. Okay, we've got all this explicit material showing up in libraries for kids. Very disturbing. That's nothing new, though, is it? We see this one just about every freaking day lately. What else do we got? Biden admin pledges $53 million to help restore Ukraine's blah, blah, blah. Just tens of millions, billions of dollars going to Ukraine. Yeah, we know. Just take it right out of my pocket. Why don't you? Just take it right out of our pockets, everybody. Okay, let's see. Oh, here's a good one. Handgun owners carrying daily doubled in 4 years. Yeah, what's up? What's up? All right, Americans are starting to get it. The number of Americans carrying handguns on a daily basis doubled between 2015 and 2019, according to a new study with self-protection found to be a key reason for the increase. Well, duh. Geez. The study published by the American Journal of Public Health on November 16 is based on a survey of 2,389 U.S. adult handgun owners conducted between July of 2019 and August of 2019. The results of the study show that roughly 3 in 10 handgun owners carried a gun on their person in the previous 30 days of the survey. Of those who carried in the past month, 4 in 10 did so every day. Always carry, every day. Extrapolating to the estimated 53 million U.S. adults who owned handguns in 2019, we estimate that about 16 million U.S. adults carried a handgun in the past 30 days, up from 9 million in 2015, and that almost 6 million did so every day, twice the approximately 3 million who did so in 2015. So in 2019, 73% of firearm owners reported owning them for protection, an increase from 65% in 2015 and 46% in 1994. So motivated by a desire for personal protection, handgun ownership between 94 and 2021 jumped to 83% from 64%. The study comes as the sale of guns skyrocketed in the state of Oregon, where a strict gun control measure was recently passed. They're talking about measure 114 there. It is a rank illegal, unjust, and unenforceable violation of the citizens of Oregon's Second Amendment. That's just me throwing in some editorial. Back to the article. The new law limits the sale of magazines holding more than 10 rounds, and it mandates buyers to obtain a permit before buying a firearm, which includes completion of a firearms training class. This law comes into effect very soon, on December 8th. According to Oregon State Police, background checks to buy a gun rose to 4,000 per day after the November 8th election, from about 850 per day prior to it. These people, when they put these gun laws out, I'll tell you what, they sell more guns for the gun industry than just about anything. Politicized events. Yeah, that'll do it. Spike in crime. That'll do it. But you go around and tell citizens that you're going to that they are going to be voting in what is arguably potentially a rigged election as to whether or not they're going to maintain their God-given right to defend themselves. Well, that will send people out to the store real, real effing quick. Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's on Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out on TNT Radio.
At the risk of being canceled,
it's a battle for free speech against the left.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, the UK summons Chinese ambassador over the beating of a BBC journalist, and here to discuss is TNT news producer and show host Darren Denslow. What's up, man? Welcome to the show.
How you doing, Brian? Good to see you. I was just listening to you talking about guns, and all I could think about was, I wish that we had guns in the UK. They got taken off us 20, 30 years ago, roughly. There was a school shooting. And they took all our guns away from us. I actually have a crossbow, which I'm allowed to walk around the streets with, but I can't have a gun, knife, or anything else. But crossbows are legal.
knife attacks are up too. I hear that knife attacks are on the rise in the UK and in Europe too. So you know, it just goes to show there's no such thing as an assault rifle, an assault pistol. Anything's an assault thing. It could be a toothbrush whittled down. Ask a correctional officer. Sorry, go ahead.
I got a pig iron frying pan out there, mate. I could run around and do a lot of damage if I really, really wanted to, and it would be an assault frying pan. Assault pan. The UK's Foreign Office has summoned Chinese Ambassador Zheng Ziguang to explain the treatment of a BBC journalist who was reporting on the protests that we've all seen the last week or two in China. Foreign Office Minister David Rutley told Parliament earlier in the day that the department would demand a full and thorough explanation from the Chinese ambassador. Edward Lawrence, a BBC reporter in China, was arrested in Shanghai on Sunday while reporting on protests against the communist regime's zero COVID policy. A BBC statement said Lawrence was handcuffed, beaten, kicked, and held for a few hours before being released. And I don't wish that on anybody, but some BBC journalists. Footage circulated online appeared to show Lawrence being tackled to the ground by a group of police and taken away. The crowd could be heard chanting, "Release the man." The BBC on Sunday said no official explanation or apology had been given beyond a claim by the officials who later released him that they had arrested him for his own good in case he caught COVID from the crowd. God forbid a BBC journalist catching COVID. Chinese Foreign Minister spokesman Zhao Lijian later rejected the BBC statement, saying Lawrence didn't reveal his identity when being arrested and refused to cooperate with the police. On Tuesday, Zhao accused British public broadcaster of always distorting the truth, lambasting the broadcaster's reporting on the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong, human rights abuses in Xinjiang, and the zero COVID policy enforced by the CCP in mainland China. The UK side must respect facts, be prudent on what it says or does, and stop its practice of double standards. And regardless of what you think about what I just said, that last line is actually quite pertinent and true. The BBC, as are all the sort of leftist propagandist media outlets in the Western world, they're all over these Chinese protests. I mean, it's literally the main story on the BBC webpage and has been all week. And yet we in the West, Canada, Australia, in Europe, in the UK, the USA had protests for the last 2 years demanding respect, demanding that we were listened to, demanding that we had a debate, demanding that we had our rights back, demanding that we wouldn't be locked down, jabbed up, masked up. Nothing in the mainstream media. And when they did have to report on any of these protests because they were too big and loud to ignore, the biggest protest in UK history happened in the last 2 years. Many of them, millions of people attended. We saw this with the truckers in Canada and the beatings handed out in Australia. Only when they were too big to ignore were they then reported on by the mainstream media like the BBC? And then it was always, look at these far-right anti-vaxxer conspiracy theorists. And you might see someone walking down the road with a placard that said, you know, I don't know, flat earth or whatever, some way of demonizing the public who are out in their millions across the world, just asking for their freedom, their no more censorship and so on. We know, we know what we've experienced, but you know, it's not all right when it's in our country, but when it's China, that's fine. Because it's overseas and we're able to criticize them and look at the CCP, look at the communists, and they have been really, really bashed. What's your impression of the media reporting on these Chinese protests over in the USA, Brian?
The mainstream media can take their reporting and stick it sideways up deep where the sun doesn't shine because of exactly what you just said. I find this whole... It is detestable. It is egregious for the mainstream media to have done what you just laid out right there. And, you know, some of those protests got so big that they had to address it. They had to let it become the enormous news story that it was. I'll use the Canadian trucker protest as the perfect example for that, which yep. you did also. Not only did they tell everybody, did they go out there and demonize these people by putting fake protesters and provocateurs out there, like you were pointing out with the signs right there to make the whole movement look bad. They put people out there too. They did the same thing with J6. That's all coming out. There's a Joe Hoft, one of our colleagues and contributing editor over at Gateway Pundit, has a series of articles out. And he just put another one out this morning, and it's staggering how much involvement there was in the protest from government, law enforcement, and this kind of thing. So, you know, demonizing people with provocateurs and fake protesters is extremely egregious, you know, like So then for our media here, you know, BBC, CBC, you know, ABC, whatever, all the various controlled media agencies, for them to like say, oh, look how terrible it is. They're abusing all these. They're abusing reporters in China. Well, Ukraine's abusing reporters, too, and we're sending them billions of dollars. Last I heard, we were sending billions of dollars to China, too, and we don't even function without China having all their, you know, Belt and Road systems that they're working on building all over the place out there in Australia. Oh my God, I can't even get into that. And you know, it's, we need to be more like China. That's the other thing they push, you know, with the whole COVID thing. Oh, we need to be more like China. Oh, do we? What is this then? Why is the Western mainstream media then saying, oh, it's so terrible. They're being mean to the protesters. You folks did nothing but be mean to the protesters and the freedom seekers, along with those forces, along with the government, along with the mainstream. You know, the mainstream media went along with all of that, demonizing all kinds of people in the West over their protests for COVID and their protests for lockdowns, their protests for jabs and mandates and all this crap. So now they want to come in here and virtue signal like, oh, it's so sad that the people of China. It's hard for me to even tell what media coming out of China I can even believe. It's very difficult to remove the wheat from the chaff when it comes to Chinese media, Chinese propaganda. You know, I mean, gosh, look how many years, Darren, it's taken us to understand Western propaganda in the countries that we actually live in. And then the geopolitical propaganda from, you know, other places, you know, whatever, the Middle East, Russia, what it's a mammoth task to be able to peel it all back and understand it. And then there's China, where it's almost impossible to peel it back and try to understand it. But here we are. It sickens me. It sickens me because it's not, they're not being sincere. They're simply just riding a wave of outrage and trying to get people to go, see, the media is all, their media is, they're pro, you know, whatever. You know, if the people want to protest, the media supports them. No, they freaking don't. And we all know it after what's gone on for the last 2 years.
Yeah, you know, the talk is, look how brave the Chinese are. They're standing up. This is the next Tiananmen Square. And you think, you weren't saying that when we did it when I went to London, I was demonized. And you mentioned the truckers, and I've got to give Trudeau a mention because he did put a tweet out. I was half hoping that I should have sent it to you, Brian, so we could have played it. But he said, obviously, everyone in China should be allowed to express themselves and should be allowed to share their perspectives and indeed protest. Justin Trudeau, the most rank hypocrite on the planet. This is a man who didn't just demonize the protesters, the truckers, the unvaccinated. He wanted to permanently exclude them from public life and financially punish them and anybody who supported them, you know, which is what the Chinese are doing now. No doubt they've got the red, you know, the QR code's gone red so that nobody can move around or travel to the protests. They've got their social credit system in, and our media is demonizing it and demonizing the CCP, knowing damn well that that is a narrative unfolding in our own country. And at the same time, they want to sort of pigeonhole or stick down the memory hole what happened in the Western world during the pandemic era. They want to forget about that, like you said, and present an image of we are a freedom-loving, freedom of speech-loving, democratic-loving, fair media outlet. You know, even worse still, and you brought it up, is the propaganda of China after being caught out by the dead people, people falling over dead and stuff in the early days of COVID at the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. I fell for it. A lot of people did. I helped generate the panic or contributed to that panic, and I feel guilt for that. Nothing can be trusted that's coming out of China. So, it's very unusual. The rule, I always go on the rule now, nothing gets out of China unless the CCP allow it to get out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't even trust this story at all. I mean, you know, I could, but it's like, I'm not going to trust it on face value. And like you said, you know, Trudeau took money from those protesters. They froze those people's bank accounts in many cases. They arrested those people. They're charging those people. And the mainstream media, they can suck it because they absolutely love this stuff. They love journalists getting beaten up because you know why? They are not journalists. They don't have to worry about getting beaten up. They're a painted man or a painted lady on TV reading a script, and that's it. So they love this stuff. They love this tyranny because they think they're on the righteous side of it, and they're not. With that, I got to let you go, Darren. I got someone in the waiting room here. Thank you so much, man.
No worries.
There he goes, yeah. Everybody. Right. Darren Denslow. Hey, be sure and catch Darren's show on TNT, Digging Deeper with Darren Denslow, with DD, all right? Digging Deeper with DD. That's weekdays at 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern, or 11 a.m. to noon in the UK, if you're out there in the UK listening. Okay, we're going to take a quick break in a second here, but before we do, just remind you real quick, TNT Radio wants to know what you think. What do you think about the Chinese propaganda? What do you think about the Chinese zero COVID policy? What do you think about the Western mass media cartel and their disgusting, disgusting analysis of these matters when you compare them to matters in the West that are similar? Upload a video, drop some audio, drop a note. TNT Radio's soapbox is there for you on the website. We're going to light that fuse for freedom every day here at TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
As someone who spent many, many years of my life as an investigative reporter for television, asking people tough questions on camera, I was kind of disappointed by some of the way the questioning went down. I mean, he just out and out lied, for instance, by saying that he didn't call the unvaccinated all of these terrible names, which he's actually on tape saying they were homophobic, they were misogynist, they were rare, all this stuff. He says it. He said it on tape. I think he said it in French, but he said it. And he denied that because, like, a couple of weeks ago, he did a sort of a walk back, as if the walk back was the only thing he'd done, right? Like, I wasn't sure that we laid as many gloves on him as could have been laid, and worse, even. Of course, the legacy media, who were all in against the convoy and the perpetrators of some of the worst lies about the convoy, all of them demonstrably false now, and proven demonstrably false at these Emergencies Act hearings in Ottawa that I'm talking about, they're all cheering that Prime Minister Trudeau did so well at the hearings. And, you know, the sad fact of the matter is, people, we will not have functioning democracy in the West as long as our news media is all in on the ideology and is not reporting objectively about what's happening.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Brace yourselves immediately.
Be a part of the conversation and follow TNT Radio on Gab, Getter, and Twitter.
We can all learn something from that.
TNT Radio.
All right. Yes, welcome back. Please do follow us on all of those social platforms. It's important to follow people like me and stations like TNT on all of the dreaded platforms, unfortunately, because, you know, they like to censor people. They like to say, oh, that guy's a thought criminal, or oh, that gal, she's definitely a wrong thinker. So, you know, we're going to have to apply an algorithm to you or something like that. I could go on, but I don't want to suck up too much time here because I've got a great guest joining. My guest has always been passionate about emerging infectious diseases like prions, Ebola virus, and 1918 influenza. She earned her doctoral degree in microbiology and molecular cell sciences while working with influenza viruses at St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, under the direction of world-renowned virologist Dr. Robert Webster. She's spent much of her career studying both animal and human viruses and has dedicated herself to having a positive impact on her community. And as an epidemiological specialist at the Hawaii Department of Health, the HDOH, if you like acronyms, she had a front row seat for the public health response to the dreaded COVID-19. And during the pandemic, she worked on the front line of response efforts, monitoring travelers, investigating cases, and executing contact tracing. Wow. Okay, so this is going to be really interesting. And that all ended when she came forward to expose corruption by the HDOH leadership, was put on administrative leave, and ultimately was discharged from her position without cause. How rude. My guest is Jennifer Smith, PhD. Do you prefer Dr. Smith, or can I just call you Jennifer? What do you like?
Jennifer's fine, Brian.
Okay, great. Well, it's wonderful to meet you, Jennifer, and I appreciate you joining the show. So that's quite the intro there. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself? I'm sure there's much more to the story here, but we'll get into that. And you've got a new book coming out we're going to talk about too.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me today and giving me the opportunity to share my story. Also, thank you so much for the introduction. I like to say that I'm a black belt in microbiology, so I have 3 degrees in microbiology. Respiratory viruses are my area of expertise, so I've spent my career working with respiratory viruses such as influenza. I've worked with RSV, mumps. I also manage government contracts for testing candidate vaccines against Ebola viruses. So I have a depth of knowledge and understanding on vaccine development and preclinical testing, which is what I spent majority of my career on. I collaborated with CDC on ways to improve mass vaccination campaigns. So I have a broad depth of knowledge and understanding from both the research side of respiratory viruses, as well as the public health side, having been on the front lines as an epidemiologist, not only during the pandemic, but as well as for a few years before the pandemic. So I have a great understanding from both sides, which uniquely positions me to talk about this, these issues.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That is it's rare to find someone like yourself who has that background and is willing to throw their hat into the ring after we've seen the way the quote unquote disinformation doesn't have been treated and all the, you know, things that have gone on. But, you know, I think we're at a point in the timeline here with this topic that a lot of people are now have open ears, whereas before, you know, the fear, they had the fear blinders on. So, Let me ask you about Hawaii. What was what was it like living in Hawaii when this all started, and how did it affect you, and how did it affect your work, and then what's the evolution and into how do we go from that to now where you're essentially like whistleblower?
Right. So I think most of the country wasn't paying attention to what was going on in Hawaii. You know, being an island state in the middle of the ocean, we're very isolated. And I think people just weren't paying attention. We had the most draconian measures implemented in the state of Hawaii throughout the pandemic. In fact, a lot of those measures continued into this year. Into late this year, actually. So we were the only state that required somebody to be tested prior to coming into the state. So they had to have a negative test within 72 hours of flying. Some islands also required a second test upon arrival. And then, of course, with the rollout of the injections, there was the vaccine passport that was implemented. So people had to be, in fact, when it started, people had to be vaccinated in the state of Hawaii to actually be proven to be vaccinated. So if they were vaccinated on the mainland, it didn't count. And then we also had instituted at some point a safe pass, they called it, to be able to visit restaurants, any public place, restaurants, gyms, movies, any outdoor, even outdoor gatherings, had to be able to show this, show your card. Yeah, our state senator actually wanted Hawaii to be more like Australia, and they actually built quarantine camps on several of the islands, and have those available now. I believe three of the islands have these facilities. So mask mandates were dropped in most of the country last year. Mask mandate continued in Hawaii till the end of March of this year. Now, that didn't mean that everyone got to stop wearing masks. A lot of groups still ended up wearing masks. In fact, the children were made to mask, even though adults could not be required to wear a mask. All the children were required to wear a mask all day, every day while in school until August of this year. So while the rest of the country was breathing free, all the children in Hawaii were still suffocating. In fact, I gave a presentation about this because if you know about ESSER funds, so these are emergency relief funds from the federal government. And one of the requirements for schools to receive these funds was that the children have masks. So it was a universal mask mandate. So essentially they were holding the children hostage for this federal funding. So it's very disturbing to see all this. And what do you do when your own government is the one who is imposing these draconian measures on you? How do you fight that?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay, cool. Not cool. It's a nightmare, actually. But let me take a headline with TNT. It'll be real quick, and we'll pick it up right there. It's a great setup for what we're about to talk about here. You're listening to TNT, everybody. We'll be right back.
Okay, everybody, listen up.
Big news.
Big news.
Real big news.
Here we go.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. People in China's southern manufacturing hub of Guangzhou clashed with white hazmat-suited riot police on Tuesday night as frustration with stringent COVID-19 rules 3 years into the pandemic boiled over. Australia saw a drop in inflation in October, which provided some relief to the economy. However, the Treasurer warned that the risk of high inflation was still there. The Dutch government plans to shut down up to 3,000 farms to meet EU green goals.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Oh, boy. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Welcome back. So, sorry for the little delay there. I was distracted because Jennifer and I were talking in the chat about California, and whoa, yeah, we don't want to go there. Texas, definitely the place. But, you know, we're talking with Jennifer Smith. She's a PhD, and she has a book coming out real soon called Pandemic in Paradise, An Insider's View of COVID Corruption in Hawaii. You can find her on the internet at smithvirologist.com. So, keep up with her over there. Find out more about the book so you can keep track of when it's going to be released and all that. And we were talking about Hawaii because she's got a lot of experience in Hawaii as she was working with the HDOH over there. And she's got all the background that one could possibly need to speak professionally as a subject matter expert about the COVID issues. And just before the break, we were kind of going through what happened in Hawaii. And it's pretty crazy, folks. I mean, I'm sure some of you are listening to this right now and you're thinking, wow, she's right. I did not hear about the differences between Hawaii and some of the other states in the United States. Most people were not paying attention to what was going on there. And I don't know that it was because they weren't paying attention. I think it was more because the mass media cartel, they actually did not like to talk about Hawaii very much because it was so draconian that it was just like beyond even the stuff that they were pushing and what she just laid out right there. I mean, vax pass implementation, the quarantine, quarantine camps, right? We won't use the other word there, but you know, you folks know what we're talking about. The safe pass, vax passes, mask mandates. And the one that really got me was the fact that the jabs had to be in Hawaii. So that means that if someone got one on the mainland, had to come back, they might have to get a hot double dose, you know? And now we're finding out that these things are not safe, not effective, and shouldn't have been necessary, couldn't have been necessary without that emergency use authorization. So that's kind of the setup there to how Hawaii, as a state and as a health organization and schools and everything responded, for those of you that may not have known. But pick us up right there, Jennifer, and tell us, maybe we could get into some of the failed response efforts.
Yeah. So first of all, my book was actually released yesterday, so it's finally available wherever you can buy books, Pandemic in Paradise. So that was really exciting. The book actually outlines everything that happened in 2020 with the COVID response in Hawaii and how I became a whistleblower. So a lot of stories there. If you're interested, please check it out. So to begin with, as I said, I was there at the Hawaii Department of Health when this all started. As you know, Hawaii has a great connection with Southeast Asia. We have a large population from China and Japan and the Philippines. So there's a lot of connection there with family in Hawaii and also with travelers. So initially we started monitoring travelers from China in February of 2020. A first case was not confirmed until March of 2020, which I have evidence now that the virus was probably circulating in Hawaii in early January of 2020. So it was already there in the islands well before our first confirmed case. So when the PCR testing was rolled out, that was the first thing. So in the response effort, I'll just lay out, there's three criteria, right, for this implementation of a pandemic response. So one is testing, two is tracing, and the third was the preventive measures of isolation and quarantine. So when the PCR test was rolled out, I was immediately, red flags went up. So immediately I was like, something's wrong here. So I have been doing PCR, designing, developing, performing PCR since the early 90s. So this test method was developed in the late 80s. So that tells you my experience. In fact, my master's degree was developing a quantitative PCR to differentiate field strains of a virus from a respiratory virus, actually, field strains of a respiratory virus from vaccine strains of the virus. So I have a great knowledge and understanding about PCR and the technical aspects of it. And initially I was like, something's very wrong. So they're using really high cycle numbers to test people. And I called this out and I was like, something's wrong. This is gonna give us a lot of false positives. Something's not right with the test. Immediately was on guard about that. You know, we saw a lot of people who were testing positive who had no symptoms. And I would just laugh to myself because I was like, How does somebody with no respiratory symptoms spread a respiratory virus? I've worked with bioaerosols, meaning I have aerosolized influenza virus, different particle sizes for different lengths of time with different concentrations of virus. I know what it takes to spread a respiratory virus by aerosol droplets. So I was immediately called this out. I talked to the state epidemiologist. I was like, something's not right with the testing. We need to look into this. We had a state senator who tested positive. He had no symptoms. It was very curious to me. We had to isolate him and quarantine his entire family, and all the state capitol shut down. Like, it was this huge drama that happened. You know, the state legislator shut down session early. So they tested everybody. We monitored everybody. No one ever got sick. No one ever tested positive. So immediately the testing was an issue. The second issue is contact tracing, right? So we were told, okay, we have to. So I think the media misunderstood what contact tracing was, because it's an epidemiological tool that's used all the time for disease investigation. So we did it for foodborne illness. We did it for, you know, arbovirus, so dengue virus, any really communicable disease, we use contact tracing. So what does that mean? It's just one aspect of the whole disease investigation process. So we would call the person who tests positive, we interview them, ask them a bunch of questions, determine where they got exposed. Then we'd ask them who they've been in contact with, so maybe who they may have exposed. And then we follow up with them and interview them. So that's kind of the crux of contact tracing. Now, the state epidemiologist and the director of Department of Health kept lying. They kept lying to the media and telling the media and the politicians that we had enough people to do this. We had enough people in disease investigation. We had enough people doing contact tracing. They kept giving these numbers. Every time it was a different number. It was 60 people. It was 92 people. It was 77 people. There were 10 of us. There were 10 of us the whole entire time working 10 hours a day, 6-7 days a week. My coworker had 100 hours of overtime in a week. She started having eye problems, vision problems. Like, we were so stressed out because of the pressure that they put on us to keep up the pace. And we had to call everybody within 24 to 48 hours. We had to contact trace everybody. We had to, follow up daily. And it wasn't just one phone call. It was daily. We had to call them every day. How are you doing? Do you have any symptoms? And it expanded exponentially so quickly. You can imagine my first case had 40 contacts, and I have to call them for that first case, it was a month, because there was no clear criteria how to actually discharge them for isolation or quarantine. So it just got to the point where we had the first shutdown in Hawaii, I think in April. And then that actually helped us, because they discontinued any travel into the state. We had no children going to school. So all schools were closed. Travel into the state was closed. Businesses were closed. I mean, when you have an economy that's based on tourism, you can imagine the economic impact this had. So 83% of all hotel workers were out of work. 76% of all retail workers were out of work. So they crippled. And now in Hawaii, already have a high cost of living. Most people already have to work 2 and 3 jobs just to barely make ends meet. Milk is $8 a gallon. You know, so families are crushed now. There's no childcare. It's not like here on the mainland. It's not like there's all these daycare places you can send your kids when you're going off to work. Kids are out of school. Now what? You got to be home with your kids because no one's there to take care of them. So a lot of kids were getting food at school, breakfast and lunch. So now what? Kids aren't eating. Kids, you know, a lot of these children, nobody has Wi-Fi. Nobody has laptop computers. These children were having to go to the damn 7-Eleven to sit outside and use their Wi-Fi to get something, some kind of connection with education. I mean, it was just, they didn't think this through at all. They basically implemented all these things for what we call the Zoom class for all the wealthy people who lived in Diamond Head and their mansions, and they could safely isolate and order food from DoorDash. But everybody else was being crushed economically. And I said that. I said that this economic impact was going to kill more people than the virus itself. So
yeah, I finally got very frustrated with all the lies.
And I couldn't, I got so frustrated with all the lies, I couldn't take it anymore. And I called the union, because Hawaii is very highly unionized. And I said, we need to talk about this because their labor practices are horrible. The way they're forcing us to work, they want us on call 24/7. They're not paying us. They're, you know, it was too much and somebody needed to help us. So they weren't hiring anybody. Now you have to understand that every state got money from the CARES Act. So this was COVID relief money. Okay. $58 million went to Hawaii for contact tracing and testing. $58 million. They never hired a single person. Where did this $58 million go? To this day, I still have no idea. Where did the $58 million go? It's unaccounted for.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And it's not the first large batch of, you know, multi zeros and commas set of dollars I've seen just kind of go poof, you know, and I'm not even talking about all that money going to Ukraine. I'm talking about stuff coming out of the CARES Act and the PPP loans and that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah.
American Relief Plan. It's just,
Right. Right. Okay. So, let me take one more station break here and we'll come back. We'll pick up that thread on the other side of a break with today's news talk. We'll be right back.
I try to avoid the headlong rush into full-throated support or criticism of someone. The former is how you get your heart broken, and the latter is how you can destroy your own credibility. It's not wishy-washy to take a wait-and-see attitude and to compliment the good, criticize the bad. Still haven't made up my mind about Elon Musk, but I'm telling you, the longer time goes on, the more I like what I see. He tweeted yesterday, "This is a battle for the future of civilization. If free speech is lost, even in America, tyranny is all that lies ahead." He's absolutely correct, and Elon has been a staunch supporter of free speech, which is why the left has lost their ever-loving minds, even going so far as buying a car from a company started by Nazis to protest Twitter being Nazi or something. They're also going crazy over him having a pistol on his nightstand. I, on the other hand, was more concerned by the four cans of caffeine-free Diet Coke. Elon, baby, that stuff will kill you. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative, this is Viewpoint.
Natural disasters may seriously threaten civilization in the future, yet the mainstream media peddles a pseudo-scientific man-made climate crisis. Natural climate change is a real threat, and historical records show that global cooling is the biggest killer, not global warming. Cooling may arise from astronomic phenomena, including solar cycles, and volcanic activity can play a major role too. For example, in 1815, Mount Tambora in Indonesia underwent the most deadly volcanic eruption in recorded history. Enormous amounts of dust and ash destroyed crops and vegetation, killed tens of thousands of people, and the eruption led to tsunamis. The following year, 1816, was known as the Year Without a Summer, as abundant frost and ice continued all year. Newspapers of the day reported extensive crop failures in Europe and the United States.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. I am with Jennifer Smith. She's a PhD. Her book is called Pandemic in Paradise, An Insider's View of COVID Corruption in Hawaii. Her website, again, is smithvirologist.com. Oh, that's a beautiful book cover also. Really nice book. You should pick it up. Definitely. It's the holiday season. Good time to pick up books. Get books instead of video games this year. And I will admit I have a new video game, but I'm not playing it very much because I'm reading a book. Okay. So we, you know, have a little bit of understanding, everybody, but still get some books this year. We need more books in our lives, I think. So, we're talking about the COVID response in Hawaii here. What a absolute disaster. You know, I used to work in Hawaii every summer for a good 6 or 7 years in a row.
Oh, nice.
So I have a little bit of experience there. I kind of know a little bit about the, you know, the culture, at least in Honolulu and, you know, that area. I know it somewhat well. And anytime I would see a story, Jennifer, about something going on in Hawaii with regards to COVID, I would talk about it on one of my shows for sure, because I already found Hawaii to be kind of a interesting little place, you know, as far as the rules and the culture and the you know, sort of heavy-handed progressive vibe they got going there, which sort of clashes with the indigenous vibe a little bit. But the whole thing is it's a very unique place. But yes, it seems to kind of live and die under their military and their tourism. You know, those seem to kind of be the things that really keep Hawaii the you know, prosperous place that it hopefully will continue to be, but not if they're going to keep these kind of measures up. I mean, where do you see this going for Hawaii?
They complain about the tourism there. They want fewer tourists, which is like, you know, they pay your bills, basically. They want the military to go away. You know, they protest that all the time because they have the largest military contingent of any state, with every branch of the military there, including Coast Guard, Space Force. So, you know, they complain about that. It's like, that's where all your money's coming from. So don't bite a hand to feed right. You know? I mean, Hawaii is a very, very unique place, and the corruption there is just, I've never in my life experienced this level of corruption. It's like a small town. I feel like it's like a small town where everyone helps everyone else. Everyone greases each other's pockets. You know, hey, you help me, I'll help you. It's all about nepotism and who you know and whose family is connected with whose family. And so it's a very, it's very intriguing. Our former police chief and his wife are in jail for corruption. The attorney general, one of the former attorney generals, the feds got him. They just arrested some more people last year on that whole scam. I mean, it's the corruption is so off the charts there. It's just unbelievable. Oh, it's very eye-opening to me.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, we've got about 8-9 minutes left. So what else is important that you want to get out to the listeners there? I mean, we could talk about the censorship and the losses that you experienced maybe, but I'll leave it to you to kind of direct us to the end of the segment here.
Right. So as I said, if you're interested in more details, please check out the book. So bottom line was, I had a press conference with Tulsi Gabbard on the lawn of the federal building in August of 2020 to expose the corruption. And I was then sidelined. I was put on admin leave. When I was brought back to work, I was underutilized. I was basically sat in a corner. You know, they have on staff a experienced expert virologist, and they sat me in the corner. They ignored me. They took away all my job duties. 5 months later, they decided, no, we're just going to fire you out of the blue. They claimed that I was posting on social media things that contradicted the Hawaii Department of Health and disparaged them at times. I tried to post on LinkedIn. So it was mainly on LinkedIn, and I was posting things there. You know, I was in a scientific vacuum being in the islands, and I was like trying to reach out to other scientists. Like, am I seeing this right? Is this what you're seeing? Like, is this seems incorrect. Like, my gut was like, things are very wrong. Things are very, very wrong. And it's not what I've been educated in and what my experience tells me and what my training tells me. And I was reaching out to people, and I was trying to get information and trying to get connected with other people to discuss these things. So one of the posts that they said was the issue was a child had come from the mainland to visit Hawaii. Now, the child was very, very sick, had underlying medical conditions, and died in Hawaii. Everyone who was going to the hospital, getting swabbed, you know, swab the nose, test for COVID so they can call them a COVID patient and get more money. They tested this baby, the baby popped positive. So I was like, let's look at the test. Let's look at the CT values. And I was like, wrong. This child does not have COVID. This is a false positive. They tested the kid twice, did not have COVID. Now, what's interesting to me is that both parents were vaccinated. And I was like, wouldn't you want the narrative to be at the time that both parents were vaccinated, so the child was protected from getting COVID because the parents were vaccinated, so you can push this injections on more people? Instead, they said it was the first pediatric death, and they played this up in the media. And I called that out on LinkedIn. I said, I posted the news story, did not give out any more information that was put in the media already. And I said that the public health professionals need to stop pandering to the politicians and the media. Stop stoking the fueling the fear. Stop. And that's what they apparently just struck a nerve. So they put me out.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. I mean, it's not like, I mean, you could have gone way harder than that, right? You could have gone in there and be like, here's a screenshot of this. Here's how PCR tests. Here's the inventor of PCRs telling people that they're not a diagnostic tool per se. Here's the cycles they ran on this thing. Here's the percentage of false positives you can get when you run this many cycles. You didn't do any of that, which you have the subject matter expertise to absolutely do. All you did, do you think that they came down on you hard, particularly hard on that post because you're a subject matter expert? It's like if I would have posted that or someone else who doesn't have your background, maybe they would have let it slide. But, you know, maybe you were a kind of a high priority.
Well, yes. So when I came out at the press conference with Tulsi Gabbard, they were starting to look at my Facebook and my LinkedIn. They were monitoring that, trying to find something that they could use against me. They had a screenshot of a story that I posted on my Facebook, which was a picture of a coworker. They tried to say that I took this picture. I was like, that was a news story that the Civil Beat, a local news media outlet, did, and the state epidemiologist approved the photos for. So like, they gave me parking tickets for parking out front, even though I had a parking pass. I mean, they were really trying. They were really trying to find something. And I was like, go ahead, look at my Facebook and my cute dogs. I don't care, you know? So like, they were really trying. So even during that whole time where I was basically teleworking, so sitting at home, they were still monitoring my social media. And so I was like, you know, I was like, okay, well, called the union straight away. And I said, you know, this is what happened. They filed a grievance. So we're going through the grievance process right now. They claim that they didn't violate the collective bargaining agreement, which is, so when you're a civil servant, when you're a state employee, you own your job. Once you pass probation, you own your job. It is your property. So now they are denying me access to my property. So it's not just like you're fired from a job without cause. They took my property from me. And so the union is very, very powerful in Hawaii. They have a lot of political sway there. They're very powerful. The union was very unhappy. And the union has now hired an attorney for me for the arbitration. So we're going to arbitration. I also called my attorney and we filed a lawsuit against the state of Hawaii and the Hawaii Department of Health. For First Amendment rights violation, whistleblower retaliation, defamation. I forget all the charges we have there, but, you know, the thing is, Brian, they don't care. They wanted me out because they know, look, I struck a nerve. They know I'm an expert. They know I know what I'm talking about. They know what they're doing is wrong. They do not like being confronted. They do not like being contradicted. They wanted me out and they will deal with the consequences later. And that's the bottom line. A lawsuit's fine. It takes years. Now, because of COVID and all this stuff, courts were already backed up. Now the case is going to be backed up. Maybe next year we'll get in. So they got rid of me and they know what they did was wrong. And they're just going to put off the consequences, you know? So that's where we're at.
They're going to regret it because now you're on the Brian McClain Show on TNT and even more people are going to know, you know, if they would have just let people like you do their jobs, nationwide, we wouldn't be in this situation right now. You wouldn't have people like me that are riled up about it and willing to, you know, get on a microphone and talk about it just about every day for, you know, 3 years on end and try to find as many subject matter experts as I possibly can and analyze as many pieces of media as I possibly can and essentially try to, you know, yeah, go ahead.
Well, the good thing is, I guess, about putting this off and delaying this is now everything that I have said, everything that I posted has now been proven true. Everything has been now been backed up by members of the NIH and CDC and all of these people who lied and lied to the public for years is now being proved true. Fauci himself is now saying, oh yeah, masks never work. Masks were never a thing. He's saying lockdowns, he got that idea from China. You know, CDC did an own evaluation of their PCR test. And look, they published their own screw up. They said that their PCR test was not only flawed, but contaminated with viral genetic material. They contaminated their own test with viral genetic material. That's why water was testing positive, fruit was testing positive, animals were testing positive, anyone was testing positive, because they artificially inflated the numbers early in the pandemic by spiking their own tests with contamination. And this is what was used to implement all of these non-pharmaceutical measures. So CDC published their own mistake in a peer-reviewed journal. So the good thing Amazing. About all of this is now everything I said is now going to be backed up by actual, look, I'm already an expert. If I say it, you can already know that it is valid. And now it can be backed up by other experts.
All right. Wow. You and I are going to have to talk again. I think we could go a lot further down this rabbit hole. I hope we can do that. It's Jennifer Smith, everybody. Check her out on the web. Thank you.